Okay, now just because an invader has given it that name long back in the VCs, does that mean that they own me now, and that's a word which I should think that it's a dirty word? Because of the way we have been governed since the time of Islamic invaders from medieval Asia. Once they came, they made their territory in Delhi. Because see, in the past, India was not Delhi-centric. It was Magad-centric. Ridiculous. Please, like, the whole IT cell is trying to kind of project that the sedition law has been removed. What they have done is take it away and put it in a new bottle and have come up with crime against sovereignty and integrity of India and have made the crime a lot more harsher, by the way.
Yeah.
So sedition has not gone. It has come in a very new dangerous package. And I think we should quickly talk about the names because it is absolutely...
So, hi, Gaurav. This is the first time I am with you, and the last time you were just so much full of knowledge that we had to do this shoot again, the part two of this.
Thank you so much for having me again. And I'm glad that you got that high in the first go.
Yeah, sure.
I think you're way more famous than I am right now in Bhubaneswar because of that reel. I'm just kidding. I'm pulling your leg.
It's fine. So, like, I don't know where to start from because we have learnings from various topics. But let's start from this basic thing. I saw your Instagram story yesterday. So let's start from that topic. Sure. I will give some context about it. Yeah. That India versus Bharat wala thing. Yeah. I will give some context. Like, I will give those sides I have read and you can.
Sure.
So there are two sides on this topic, that whole Bharat and India wala thing, that the BJP, they are in their Twitter handles, they're using that, you know, this minister of Bharat and not India.
Yeah.
G20 invitation, they used Bharat and all this stuff. One side, it is saying that India is a name, which is the right-wing side. He is saying that India is a name which is given to us and it's a geographical name from the river Indus.
Mm-hmm.
But Bharat is a name which is a civilizational name, which we got from our civilization, the Sanatan Dharma and our cultures and all that stuff. So we should retain our civilizational name and not endure to a English name, which is given by our invaders. This is one side. And another side is, which is, I guess, the lawyer wala side, that already Article 1 says that India, that is Bharat.
Mm-hmm.
So this country already, you know, India and Bharat are the same.
Mm-hmm.
So there, it's not also a point renaming it, because already India, that is Bharat, is there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, you use India or Bharat, is the same thing. There's no difference.
Right.
So what's your perspective on this thing?
Mm-hmm.
And what you think about these two sides, and if you are a counter for it, you know, explain it.
I don't actually feel very strongly about this topic. I feel that this entire topic has been generated now just when the elections are around the corner as a divisive issue, because no matter which party it is, whenever the elections coming around, there are these points where you need to be on the left or the right of it. So it's just, it's inane. But what my problem right now is the fact that we are trying to create a scenario where the word India is like a bad word. Okay, and I'll give you context regarding this. In terms of the people who are supporting the change to Bharat completely.
Okay.
The constitution obviously calls it like India and Bharat both. What is happening is, there was this whole assumption that the Britishers have given us this name and we should decolonize ourselves, you know, because the way Sri Lanka did it with Ceylon and whatnot.
And that Turkey, Turkey.
Correct. There are many countries who have changed their names from what the Britishers had given them.
Yeah.
Now, at the very outset, this needs to be corrected, that India was not given to us by the Britishers. Okay, it was back in the BCs. It's absolutely correct. It was a geographical linked name where people staying on the other side of the Indus. Okay. Now, this is a name which we grew into, in my personal opinion. You know, when you're standing in the stadium, and let me finish.
Okay.
When we're standing in the stadium and we're saying India, 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 like the whole power that we get. Okay. Now, when you're trying to create a divisive issue on Bharat and this thing. Now, where does the word Bharat come from? The word Bharat comes from the son of Shakuntala and Dushyant in one of our Puranic stories, where after Bharat, since he was such a great king, his tribes became to be known as the race of Bharatas.
Yeah.
And the places they eventually conquered came to be known as Bharatvarsh, not Bharat. In fact, India has never been called Bharat till recent times.
Yeah.
It was always called Bharatvarsh. Okay. Now, Bharatvarsh, by the way, is not just India's legacy. It is Sri Lanka's. It is all the way to Sumatra, Indonesia, as well as Pakistan, as well as Bangladesh. Because at that point of time, Jambudweep, the original name which was given to the Indian subcontinent, India ruled over all. The India concept that we understand.
Yeah. Okay. Like during the Mauryan period, I guess.
No, no, even before back, also, back, even back. You know, also. In the Mahabharata, yeah, when yeah. they were doing all this, see, Bharata.
Yeah, Shakuni and all, they are from that Afghanistan side. So, yeah.
So Shakuni is from Gandhar. Yeah, Gandhar is present in Afghanistan. Very beautifully put. So, what happens is when you're using a term, and Bharata, by the way, was an ancestor of even the race of Ram as well as the Pandavas and the Kauravas, right? Now, when you're using a name like that, and that's, but you know, when the constitution makers are coming up with the name, and it's very interesting to note, Jinnah, at the time of Pakistan's creation, opposed a lot that we should not get the name India. He said that is Indus River. He made the same arguments, interestingly, which the right-wing fundamentalists are making right now. This is a geographical location named. How can India take it? India should be just called Hindustan, land of Hindus.
But again, Hindu is also a geographical name, na? Like from River Sindhu.
Exactly. I was just coming to that. Hindus, the whole idea is the word Hindu, some people say it's from Sindhu River.
Yeah.
Some people also say that when people had to come over this side from the Middle East,
yeah.
they used to cross a place called Sirhind. Okay, Sirhind. Okay. And from there also the name could have come about. Whatever it is. So if you're thinking, and now the same people who claim very proudly Hindu Rashtra Chahiye, Hinduism, Hindu. This word also is a word that invaders called us. Because as Gargi in the previous interview said, we didn't have a concept of religion. Hinduism is a way of life. Sanatan Dharm. Correct? But the word Hindu, which we all identify ourselves with now, is a name given to us by invaders, technically speaking.
Yeah.
But we have grown into it and we have owned it. We are Hindu. I mean, I am a Hindu and I'm a very proud Hindu. Okay. Now, just because an invader has given it that name long back in the BCs, does that mean that they own me now and that's a word which I should think that it's a dirty word? No. It's a word that I've grown up with. And it's a beautiful word that we all share a legacy. And the same thing goes with India. And that's why the constitution makers were very clear that both are our names. Now, what happens now is when you make one name, again, I'm going back. Sorry, I'm linking this to the previous interview with Gargi. The whole idea is when you want to make something better, it should not be by putting down something else.
Yeah.
Say Bharat, okay. Great. Make Bharat in a lot of places. Go for it. No problem. But why are you giving India a dirty word? And now, by the way...
But I guess this happened because the opposition alliance named...
Why did they do that? Because of which is a major reaction.
And they also, you know, opposition did that because of this political thing. BJP, the right-wing side, they always refer to as, you know, Bharat and Vande Mataram and all that stuff. So, they knowingly did that to create a face-off. And
exactly. So, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't care which party has done what. All I know is whatever is happening at that level, it's all politics.
Yeah.
And the people who will suffer are people like us. Where suddenly, later on in the future, there's a possibility, which by the way, I'll tell you why it will not happen now, I feel. Is that suddenly I'm proud to be an Indian. I'm Indian. No.
You can't say that.
It's like, okay, that's a dirty word. That becomes an anti-national word. It's no longer a word which I'm succumbing to Britishers or something on those lines. You know, when Shah Rukh Khan says that line in Chak De India, if you have seen the story which I put up, and he says that mujhe kisi ke naam nahi sunai dete, sirf ek mulk ka naam sunai deta hai, India. Now, here's the good development in my personal opinion that has taken place. They are saying, Pakistan's lot of right-wing parties are now saying that, theek hai, if they let go of India, on UN, they will make a claim that they want the name India. Because they have always had this claim that Indus is actually their main river. It comes from our side, but because of the way that it is partitioned, majority of the Indus river, in fact, Indus is their Ganga. You can call it in that way. So they say, how can a name which is associated with the river be India's name and not our name and not Pakistan's name?
I guess this was Jinnah's argument, but Murshid Quli Khan, he again, Pakistan is a series of singer like Pashtun and Balochistan
yes,
and everything.
Yes, yeah. yes. So now what happened is, Jinnah did not want India's name for Pakistan. It said that we should not take the name.
Yeah,
The India name should go away.
Yeah.
You know, and which is interesting that the people are supporting Bharat now, which is great. Support Bharat. I am a Bharatiya, but I am also an Indian. There does not have to be this distinction. And see, you don't have to also look at it from a political angle. You have to look at it from the backdrop of this whole thing, debate it has been going off, Hindi imposition. You know, Bharat is a Sanskrit word. It's a beautiful word. And we all adopt it. We all think of it. But if you look at the recent trends and change in laws, law names here and there, whatever is happening, the way it is being slyly done, you know, that's an issue. If in G20, they wrote President of Bharat. Okay, great. I love that. It's amazing. But the norm always has been precedent of India. Why? Because internationally, India is known as India. You know, Bharat is the name which we enjoy. But when you're doing it at an international level, are you trying to give an indication that something is changing? And then suddenly you have tweets coming out from, you know, people who have supported this.
Yeah.
Very orchestrated, Bharat Mata Ki Jai. I love that line, Bharat Mata Ki Jai. But I feel like now it's being used as a war cry. So that is my issue. When something which is done for the wrong reasons, even if it is right, I think it corrupts it.
The two names of the country are becoming two political ideologies.
Exactly. And the divide and rule is something which probably the Britishers did best. But I feel that we are carrying that on. Is that an issue which we need to be divided on? That's the question.
Yeah.
At the time when the country is faced with so many issues, on a name... I don't think so.
And also, at this time, like, our country is holding a summit like the G20 summit.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of important things that are being discussed there. But the news headlines are not those important things about the,
exactly.
About the climate change and all those, you know, new offices coming out in Gujarat and all that developmental stuff. But the news is filled with this debate.
This, and that's what really annoys me, because it is such a proud thing that India is hosting G20 and has done a great job in, you know, clearing the slums, apparently. But just still making sure that such an international event goes on seamlessly, but no one's talking about it. The world media is talking about it, but Indian media is the only one who's talking about this issue. But luckily, recently, what I just heard in the morning, that certain ministers who are in the cabinet have come out with saying that this is nonsense and we are not changing the name.
Yeah, because none of the cabinet ministers said that we are going to change the name. But again, that those media and everything are creating a hype that in this coming September's assembly session, parliament session, they will bring a resolution to change the name. But it's nothing like, you know.
Concrete?
Yeah.
I agree, but some think tanks or people who are working in Delhi, some of my friends, I heard apparently that the whole possibility that Pakistan may even adopt the name India. Can you imagine what a comical situation that would emerge? You know, we keep saying to anti-nationalists, apparently, you know, go back to Pakistan and whatnot. That's the whole idea. Imagine you have to say them, go back to India. It's just ridiculous. You know, so I think that is one thing which we didn't consider. I also think that I wish the opposing alliance did not co-opt a name which is of the entire country.
Yeah.
I wish that didn't happen.
That's also.
Just leave the names alone, man, is my thing. Like, do your politics, but leave the names alone.
And, you know, we are talking about these laws and stuff. And I will talk about this independent journalism wala thing.
Okay.
I saw a video of YouTuber Nitish Rajput where he explained very briefly that none of the media houses in this country is independent.
Yeah.
Either it is controlled by a businessman or any political party. But if you will see the history, every newspaper or every media was created out of a revolution.
Yeah.
To create a revolution, to bring change, that's why it's called the fourth pillar of democracy and all that stuff. But slowly, of course, it's getting ruined because it's no longer doing it. So it's all about just giving headlines and taking TRP and stuff.
Sure.
I personally thought a lot about this independent journalism wala thing, and I saw in Twitter about a lot of people who do this independent journalism wala thing. But I mean, but to be honest, like, their money is just getting grassed and there is no great source of income in that thing. So how do you think that, you know, independent journalism, which is true journalism, we can bring out it in India? Because if you see the Western media, the BBC and stuff, they charge a lot of money to people from where they generate their revenue. So that doesn't depend themselves on, you know, businessmen and all those politicians and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the Indian... I mean, I have a lot of respect for all the journalists.
Yeah.
But many journalists go with a certain mindset, but they have to adopt that mindset because it is their career. What is the solution according to you?
So, comparing it with BBC becomes a little unfair because BBC is this legacy news channel which the UK has always respected by way of traditions. If anyone has watched The Crown show on Netflix, they would know that BBC India has a very special status. Plus, BBC has various other sources of revenue because BBC itself produces a lot of shows, you know. So, what I have seen, the trend in any economy which is trending towards the... or heading towards the capitalist direction, the eventual crumbling of media, you know, the pillar of media, as I call it, into this whole biased form one way or the other is inevitable. You know, you, in fact, in the present day world, you have two kind of choices. You either have a choice like China, where it's completely state controlled and you have absolutely no freedom to venture out. So you don't even have a dissenting opinion. Or you have a case like India and US, where the media is completely bought out by corporate structures who are also donating to both the parties, by the way. And then you can see that, okay, one party is completely heavily biased towards one media will be completely biased towards one party, the other will be completely biased. How to bring about a change in this is something which I do not know. My preference to read news is newspaper and Outlook magazines, because that is the one place where I feel that it's... true and articulate journalism.
And reading multiple newspapers, because, you know, like if you, I will not take the names, but if you will read two newspapers you of the same news,
right,
you can figure out the similar things, and the similar things will be the facts and other things will be the opinion.
Correct. I mean, that is bound to happen because someone is writing a bit of opinion at the end of the thing in the opinion section. So that does happen. Now, if you have the time to read multiple newspapers, go for it. Yeah. But generally, we do not have that kind of time. In fact, people are not even reading newspaper these days. Everything is like on in shorts or something on those lines, where news is given to you in a very truncated form.
It's all about headlines.
Correct. You know, even like the Indian Idiot and Scoop Poop, they have started delving into the news section because they know that people are just not trusting news channels anymore, because they have become like a Ekta Kapoor TV show these days, you know, with the whole tamjam they do. And this is not something which is unprecedented. US went the exact same route with the Fox News channel completely turning into a political party stooge. So I think the way out would be to have a council at the head who actually has teeth when it comes to powers, and they can come down heavily on these news channels when they become too partisan, or when they kind of indulge in something, in a kind of tomfoolery which is just unacceptable. You know, like if you remember the Sushant Singh Rajput case, which was a very intimate case connected to a lot of fans of SSR and India as a whole, because it felt like someone was an outsider. You know, you wish that that tragedy did not happen.
It was very relatable to any person.
But when news channels start showing his pictures and then alternating it with Riya Chakravarti's pictures, where she is just clad in a bikini and heavily focusing on her cleavage, you are kind of very evidently color the public's opinion. It's too evident. And when faced with such criticism, when the news channels say that no, but she puts up these pictures on her Instagram, that's a very flawed argument, because that's not the narrative which you're trying to show.
I mean, you are showing someone's death with that. It's nothing similar.
Exactly.
It's not a fashion show or something that
you're trying to create this whole femme fatale image where you're trying to paint her as the vamp. And that's when facts starts to get diluted. Like, even if someone is actually spewing out facts, you know, the gullible would not believe them, and it just, I think, muddles the entire thing. So ASCII, you know, there are a lot of TV organizations, I don't know the names really, they do have a set of guidelines that's supposed to follow, but and they do come down heavily on these channels when they are breaching those rules. But the fines that they impose is 0.00001% of what money they might have gotten from that one episode. So it has no value.
You know, that's why I slightly like the kind of stuff Smita Prakash is taking out with the ANI podcast. Like, she's calling out a lot of people. At the same time, she's calling out someone called OVC. And at the same time, someone like, you know, Sai Deepak and stuff.
Right.
So she's calling out people from two extremes and also from the center.
Yeah.
So if the people have the time to see those things, so they will very easily, they can validate which is fact and which is opinion and what should they should follow and they should not.
I mean, that is the entire objective of a TV presenter or someone who's conducting a debate, is to be the moderator of the conversation. But lately, as we have seen from Republic TV, Arnab Goswami, to actually every other new channel, why am I pinning him, though he started it, I suppose, where the moderator speaks the most. And that is unheard of, you know. And like, even in partisan TV shows like the US TV channels, you really don't see the moderator coming in and kind of scolding people who he has invited, you know. And in fact, at some point of time, it became like a show where they just used to find two Pakistani generals just so that they can go and scold him and, you know, create a tamasha all of it. And violence is something which people and humanity as enjoy. A species is something which we enjoy. Be it Game of Thrones, be it the book that I have written, you know, or anything with respect to like violence. It kind of caters to our baser urge.
It's very evolutional because we grew up from apes through violence and all this.
So then when you see that on news channel, you're like, okay, well, I love this. It's like art pastime. You know, and I think that kind of not only dilutes the news, it kind of affects you.
You know, I mean, I remember a dialogue. Are you Anand Ranganathan? You
yes,
know?
Of course.
Yeah, I remember he's saying something on the Beer Biceps podcast that he spoke once to a BJP minister where he said that he said to that minister, you can easily speak out in the public that, see, we are doing this much for the minority community and it is too much.
Yeah.
So there is no need for you to feel insecure and all the stuff. We are already doing work for you. So he said that that BJP politician said that yes, we are doing, but we'll not say that in the public that yes, we are doing because aag lag rahi nahi chahiye. That's the point. People enjoy those things.
Yeah.
And I will speak about this Hindi imposition wala thing. I will speak about my perspective.
Sure.
What I feel is, you know, Hindi has come out, you know, as a vast language in the North India and all this stuff. Presently, I guess in our education system, we are given this, you know, first language, English we have to read, of course, compulsory. And then second and third language. Second language, we read on a regular manner. And third language, like, you know, basics, how to write and how to, you know, speak and understand. So I guess a Hindi speaking person in North can be given this option to learn one of the South speaking, you know, Telugu or Tamil, and the South speaking person can be given this option to, you know, learn one of the North Indian languages. And this, in this way, the diversity can be spread all over through India, which will, you know, which will not be like the Hindi imposition. It will be like learning each other languages for the sake of, you know, equality and, you know, integration and all that stuff. What do you think about it?
I don't think that's a feasible idea because of, if you look at it in isolation, sounds great. You know, of course, you're learning different languages, but you're still giving Hindi a lot more importance because Hindi will be the third option in all these states, right? Whereas when you go to the North, and if you're doing the, I'll give you actually, well, there are 100 things wrong with that model actually. First problem. In the North, when you're giving them the choice of language, which language would you give them as an option? Kannada, Tamil, Malayalam, Odia.
Odia.
Or there are so many languages, so many, you know, within these languages. Which one would you give? Maybe you give them all as an option. Each one chooses something different. Dilution of factor. You go to the South, according to the model which you have suggested, the third language will always be Hindi. I'm giving an example, right? That is Hindi imposition. First, and
also
second,
you are not giving Hindi and you are giving them this you know, freedom to choose Punjabi or Marathi, then again it's the dilution of things.
Correct. Second and most important is that, assuming a scenario where you kind of cross over the first problem, we can't look at this in isolation. The moment you try to get the South, I'm using this as a generalized term, they hate it, by the way. They are Tamil Nadu, they are different states. But just because as an opposition, and it should not be just South, even Odia people object to it. When you're trying to drive them, say that, okay, learn a little bit of Hindi. Okay. The moment they say yes by mistake, they will start bringing Hindi as a whole down all the way, saying that you already know basics. So now you don't have a problem. You shouldn't have a problem. I mean, your language is still the higher language, but Hindi to har jagah ho sakta hai abhi. Because now you have a little bit of basics. Pata hai. So you kind of force them to learn that. So that becomes imposition again. Third, why? Why do you need this? You know, see, in a world which is globalized, where the world has become a lot smaller, I have to stress this. I cannot stress this enough. English is not the most spoken language in terms of sheer population. And a lot of statistics have shown that it is actually Mandarin, which
but
is
I
Chinese
think
language.
English is the administrative language in India.
Correct. So that's what I'm trying to give you a point, actually. Now, Cantonese is the most spoken language in the world. Okay. But why is English such a common factor across the world when this one language is spoken so much? Because this has somehow become the language that has made the world smaller, connected all of us. Okay. The whole idea that we are trying to give importance to each language of each state. Hindi itself has so many dialects. Yeah, Maghi. I mean, if you were going for Sanskrit, you know, okay, I might say fine, because Tamil also has a root in Sanskrit, Hindi also has a root in Sanskrit. Every language, Sanskrit is the mother
Sanskrit
of all languages.
Is the mother of all languages.
If you were going, no, because half the population in the north, this will never be able to speak that pure Sanskrit. Sanskrit is a very difficult language. In fact, Sanskrit is called the most correct language because you don't even have the concept of silent words there. You know, because everything has a matra. You know, were you going for that? No, no one's going for that. Because Hindi is a lot easier to learn. Hindi, in fact, was a caste language, which was spoken by the localized people. Sanskrit was the language of the higher
class.
The texts and the, you know, however it was. But we don't want that. So, when you go for this, the necessity of this is just not there. It is just a way of the North imposing itself again on the South because of the way we have been governed since the time of Islamic invaders from medieval Asia. Once they came, they made their territory in Delhi. Because see, in the past, India was not Delhi-centric. It was Magad-centric.
Yeah.
Pataliputra was literally the center of India in a way.
Yeah.
And you know, all the kingdoms, be it the Guptas and everything, Uttar Pradesh, Kannauj, all of these that area, the kingdom used to go from there. And then came the south, where the Vijayanagar kingdom became the most mighty empire, and the Cholas kind of conquered Southeast Asia. So south became like one of the most powerful kingdom. Then Marathas, again, in the center. But once the medieval invaders came in, they started ruling from Delhi as a point because...
And they also used Persian and Urdu as a language, which is a lot similar to Hindi.
Correct. It's not a lot similar to Hindi.
I mean, it's... You know, if you are speaking Hindi, it will be easy for you to speak Urdu because a lot of...
Urdu is in fact a... amalgamation of Persian and Hindi.
Yeah,
so Urdu
exactly.
came because of a joining of this language. Hindi was like a lower language. Again, similarly, Persian and Urdu as well have the same relation as Sanskrit and Hindi.
Yeah.
You know, Persian pure. Yeah, exactly. Urdu was a little lower class, and then ultimately Persian went away. Urdu became a higher class. So languages keep changing. But why this issue? Why do we need this? India is on the is the most special country across the globe. And I'm not saying this because I'm an Indian. It generally is. Genuinely is because of the diversity that we have. Why do you want to eliminate that diversity by trying to have one language across when so many people don't want it? You know why? Because so that the North can enjoy. Why? There's no need. Is the world functioning well because of, like, if the Hindi thing is not there in the South, is there any problems that are being caused because of this?
No.
That's not happening. But if you try to impose Hindi, do you realize the problems that will happen?
You know, this is a very hypothetical situation.
Yeah, please.
I don't know if this is going to happen or not. Assume after, 20-30 years, a prime minister coming from South or even Odisha. In fact, you can take the example of Nirmala Sitharaman as well. All those, Kharge and everyone who is there from South in the parliament too. They do learn Hindi there and they have to do it because all the speeches and everything they give, it's basically in Hindi. So isn't it, whatever you do, I guess always be it will, Hindi will be a, little... higher language than not higher level, a largely spoken or anything.
So it's not imposition or spoken. What happens is, unfortunately or fortunately, UP is one of the it's the biggest state in India. I hope that has not changed.
In population.
In terms of population, so what happens? Its representation in Lok Sabha. See, in representation in Lok Sabha is proportionate to state population.
State population. Yeah.
So UP has the honestly, when Indian elections take place, if you've gotten UP, you're kind of assured, now you're going to have a victory.
Yeah.
Because you suddenly have captured the media. And the same thing happens in US as well. Hillary Clinton would have won, but Donald Trump got Texas.
Texas, yeah.
You know? And then Texas has a big swing, it's called a swing state or something on those lines. So UP is a swing state.
Texas had a lot of African American who voted for Trump, so the minority vote also.
Correct, so that also happened and there are a lot of Republicans there. So when you have a state and so whenever a prime minister comes, they're trying to reach out to these people. Because in the South as well, central party does not win, if you think about it.
Yeah.
So when you're saying prime minister is coming up and speaking in Hindi or something, that's because the national party is constituted of winning in all these areas on top. Because there's one party which can win across. in the South, each state has its own prime regional party. So there's no unity, you know, because they all have different parties.
It's true.
So practically speaking, it can't happen. Now, let's say the South had one language. I'm telling you for a fact, we would have not had a Hindi-speaking prime minister.
Yeah, it's true.
So, but since the South never calls itself South, they say, no, we're different states.
Different states.
And if you look at it, no one party has...
I mean, Periyar had his arguments of, you know, creating a Dravidian state and everything. But again, he was, you know, he was a way more like extreme Periyar in his...
Yeah.
So, you know, recently the laws, the criminal laws were changed.
Mm-hmm.
The IPC and the CIPC. Yeah. We'll not talk about the names that are changed. We'll talk about the laws that were actually changed. I guess the Sedition Act was removed and all that.
That's ridiculous. Please, like, the whole IT cell is trying to kind of project that the sedition law has been removed. What they have done is take it away and put it in a new bottle and have come up with crime against sovereignty and integrity of India and have made the crime a lot more harsher, by the way.
Yeah.
So sedition has not gone. It has come in a very new dangerous package. And I think we should quickly talk about the names because it is absolutely ridiculous. I have taken higher Hindi in Loyola. I'm an Odia, but I've taken higher Hindi in Loyola when I was studying. And I have difficulty in getting the name right. You know, India has always had, by the way, Hindi, no matter what we say, Hindi is slightly more supreme in terms of the attention it gets. Because every law the central legislation comes out with will have an English format and will have a Hindi one. Always. Whenever you open any act, you will see in English and then you will see the second in Hindi. No other language.
Yeah.
Okay. This has always been the case. In fact, the constitution also says that every law will have an English heading and in Hindi it will have a Hindi heading.
Yeah.
When you try to give a Hindi heading to an English law, what are you trying to do? In fact, the Code of Criminal Procedures heading, if you translate it, it says something like law for the well-being of the people. What? That has nothing to do with procedure. So you can clearly see it was even a lazy effort to come up with a label. You know, to again play the divisive. Why? Why change it? You know, the sections, we could have just added it. They have no idea the nightmare this is going to cause. Everyone knows 302 is murder. 420 is fraud.
No,
there are laws have based on it. There has to be a rationale for completely overhauling this. You know, when the sexual harassment Nirbhaya case took place and when they came out with new section because of that section, sexual harassment protection against that law kind of was introduced.
Yeah.
Section 354D was added by way of an amendment. You are not coming out with so many changes. In fact, the new law is 80% similar to the old law.
Same. It only, I guess, only 303 laws are totally changed.
Okay.
Everything other, I mean, Amin Shah told this that only 303 laws and everything is the same.
Exactly. So why do you have to change the section? Why do you have to create this bureaucratic nightmare for no reason? And why do you have to change the name? Imagine some people in the South. I can't pronounce it. Now I'm supposed to say my law when I'm arguing for the court and I say, my lord, under 302 of IPC or under 420 of IPC, this has to be done. Now under 402 of Bharatiya Sanhan something, and I have taken Hindi. I know Hindi. Mujhe Hindi bahut acche se aata hai. I have slightly different accent, but I can speak Hindi. Now think about the people who have no idea about Hindi. How will they pronounce this? How will they learn this? This is a sly way of, in my opinion, a Hindi imposition. Why do you need to do this? When you anyway have a translation of the language. In Patna, a lot of lawyers speak in Sanskrit. You know, Lucknow, by the way. They come and say, Mohatarma, you know, to the lady judge. And they will completely say in Hindi. Nothing stops them because it's a Hindi law as well. But when you're putting Hindi now in English, you're creating a big issue. And now that too, when you're doing it in such a blatant manner. How can Code of Criminal Procedure, which deals with procedure of crime, have something like... a well-being of the people or something, that's a translation of what the Hindi
word is. Bhartiya Nagarik Suraksha Sangha.
Haan, wo kaise ho gaya? Suraksha kaise ho gaya? The Code of Criminal Procedure hai. It just, like, no linkage to the content. So, yeah, it's a... I don't know. I wish we focused more on the development part, but the whole idea, as you very rightly put, ki
have you read the two laws?
No, not completely.
So, basically, what I was asking, but is there any important laws that were changed in this act?
So I've not completely done a comparative analysis of both the law, but I did look at the sedition part because I became very happy that the sedition was finally taken off. And then I saw that it was completely repackaged and made harsher. So I did look at the law vis-a-vis mob lynching. And that's a good thing that has come about.
Okay.
But again, there's no clarity because let's say a mob goes and kills someone. Each one of them could be given a death sentence.
Okay.
Which someone has not been actually involved in hurting that person. So these things will require clarity. But I just wish that they amended the existing law rather than you know, do this whole thing.
So now we will do a little segment about questions from your books. Okay. So the first one is, you speak about badass women in ancient India as one of the driving themes of your book.
Right.
And why so?
So there's been an interesting thing about ancient India. Now, if we talk about women warriors in Indian history, you will come up with a lot of names. You know, Rani Lakshmi Bai, Uda Devi Pasi, Viranganas, all the Dalit Viranganas that we have. Now, if I speak about women warriors in our mythology, you will come up again with, you know, maybe Ma Durga and Ma Kali, goddesses of war. It's amazing that India has a goddess of war. But if I ask you to actually name a mythological character, a woman who was involved in warfare, you will not come up with any name. It's bizarre. You know, Sita was completely trained in the art of fighting, but she never actually fought someone. You know, Kaikeyi rescued Dashrath from an army, but as a charioteer. So it struck to me as a little odd that with a history of such resplendent female warriors, how come we don't have someone in mythology which is something like that? And then I saw Krishna's third wife, Satyabhama. She flew on the back of Krishna and fought a Rakshasa king in the northeast, present-day Assam. At that time, it was called Prajyotisha. Krishna actually fainted because of an attack. And Satyabhama fought with her sword and killed Narkasur, the demon king. And to me, that was like absolutely badass, you know? Stories about Indian women have always been about them overcoming patriarchy. Damsels in distress, overcoming issues. I wanted to speak about damsels who cause distress. You know, so from there, Satyabhama was born. In fact, the woman on the cover of the book is actually Satyabhama.
Okay.
And it deals a lot with her story in the...
Another one is, you have a Kalingan pirate princess as one of the main characters. Why Kalinga?
I mean, I'm from Odisha, so naturally I have a loyalty towards Odisha. But when doing the research of the book, I discovered that Kalinga has such a rich naval history. You know, it's amazing how so many Odias do not know this, that the Bali Jatra that we celebrate in Cuttack every year is a tradition that has been going on for thousands of years to honor our ancient mariners or sailors who used to take these beautiful swan ships called Boitas and travel all the way to Southeast to colonize it. In fact, in a very interesting way, we were the Britishers of the ancient world.
Okay.
You know, Java, Sumatra, all these islands, we used to bring back so many riches that Kalinga used to celebrate our sailors. That changed a little later because of silting of our harbors. Like Chilika used to be a major harbor. Konark used to be a major harbor. But that changed over the course of time because of geographical reasons. And that's why Bengal became the major port. Otherwise, it was always Odisha. So when I saw that, I wanted to bring this about. But you know, the thing is, when you try and tell someone this information, it kind of feels like, okay, someone's trying to tell me GK. But when it is portrayed by way of an entertainment medium, either through a Bollywood movie or through a book, that's when it stays. So I thought I'll create a pirate princess character. So
do you
One second, why are you hurrying? No. You're constantly looking here and then I'm like getting distracted.
It's like...
Is everything okay?
Okay, cool. So the last question is, do you really think that the, you know, the fantasy books are, the hyper fantasy books is increasing in India?
I hope so, because after the popularity of Game of Thrones, people have woken up to the possibility of slightly bigger books which have a lot of world building in it. The thing is, in a post Chetan Bhagat era book, and nothing against him, he got a lot of people to start reading. We as a whole have kind of moved away from the Arundhati Roy's and the Vikram Seth books, you know, which were like really fat and chonky books. The reason why they are fat is because when we dive into them, it's an entire world of their own where we get lost and where we're traveling, and that's why it stays with us. You know, when I was trying to get Sons of Darkness published, the whole idea, they loved the book, they were saying split it into two. I'm like, I can't do that, you know, because I am trying to get Game of Thrones in India. I'm trying to get Lord of the Rings in India. You know, India has a very interesting business model. Whatever works in US, you kind of try and get a better version of it. Uber became Ola, Amazon became Flipkart. Right? But somehow, despite the success of these amazing franchises, Lord of the Rings is the highest earning movie franchise, one of the highest at least. And same goes for Game of Thrones as a show. Why hasn't India captured on this yet? And it's because the publishing industry has not taken a leap of faith. So even my book, I ultimately self-published it, but then Bloomsbury UK, not India. Bloomsbury UK, the same guys who published Harry Potter, loved the book and they picked it up and it came from London to India, you know. But the reception that it is receiving, I hope that it opens doors to a lot more fantasy readers.
Okay. Thank you, Gaurav, for this amazing conversation. And I would recommend people to read your book, of course.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a great
pleasure. So, cheers.